You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today on this fine Thursday afternoon with my dear good friend, Mr. Doug O'Brien. How you doing, Doug?
I'm doing well, Mark. How are you?
Good, good. I'm plugging along here. This has been the week for me to catch up on all the stuff that I haven't been doing because I've been working on this big, huge project. And so So this week I got back to working on a novel that I've been working on. Got another 2,000 words written on that, so I'm happy with that. And I'm working on a little project for diocesan newspaper, basically trying to look at what's called the kerygma or the great story. What is it that's at the heart of our faith? What's the core of it? And it's surprising how difficult it is for a lot of people to get at that, for various reasons, because the Catholic faith, being Catholic, concerns itself with a whole bunch of stuff. So like this week, the Catholic faith has been concerning itself with the human rights of refugees. If you turn on the news, you'd think that pretty much the heart and soul of the gospel is something about abortion and something else about gay marriage.
and Hobby Lobby.
And it's like, and a lot of people are, especially non-Catholics, are genuinely surprised to discover that that's not really the heart of the faith. That's not really what the faith is about. And getting at the question of what the faith is about, namely Jesus Christ and him crucified and raised from the dead, a lot of people are kind of surprised to hear that, oh, is the Catholic Church still believing that too? I mean, you'd not know it from the way it's covered in the press, you know. But that's in fact the case. And when the Pope, by the way, said that a couple of years ago, said that, you know, the center of the faith is not the struggle with abortion, actually. You can have, the church is not primarily an ethical society that's about those kinds of issues. That's not what the apostles went out into the world to proclaim. It's a corollary of what they went into the world to proclaim. But the main thing they went out to say was Christ Jesus and him crucified and raised from the dead. And a lot of people kind of forget that. So I'm working on a piece about that right now. Just going back to that very core thing. But that doesn't mean, of course, that the faith isn't concerned with ethical issues. And we're facing a whole slew of them right now as Catholics. And negotiating all of that is a big issue. And, you know, we're watching this week as the unfolding roller coaster ride of the Trump administration continues onward, sending out waves of chaos and horror and laughter into the world. But I think it's important for us to address that as well. Your work is involved, of course, a fair amount of work with the poor and the dispossessed.
Correct.
And we're watching the poor and the dispossessed get it on the chin right now in this administration. And I thought we'd maybe spend a little time talk about that.
Sure.
Can you kind of recap for the benefit of our audience the latest in chaos and disaster that has been unspooling because of our new president?
Well, again, as someone who considers himself a devout Catholic, who does really reside frequently in thought and prayer on the birth and crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus as the center of my life, right? That matters a great deal, but there's just no escaping that this has been a crazy week. It's hard not to have your focus a little bit moved away. Is that, Friday we had the March for Life in Washington. And like I think many people who are pro-life and anti-abortion was very disappointed that much of the mainstream media only covered it in passing, it seemed. There wasn't really as much coverage on the, I think several hundred thousand in Washington, many, many young people. Once again, exercising as we can in this great country, their right to protest what they believe to be a fundamentally unjust law. Yet, less than 24 hours later, that same day, the administration issued a edict that prevented refugees for 120 days from entering the country. They caused chaos at least some airports around the country. And that was part of the news cycle for 48 hours.
Yeah.
I think many, though I don't consider myself necessarily a conservative overall, is that I understand the frustration that many people had with the focus of attention, except to say that there were some really heart-wrenching stories that came out of people that families separated and children allegedly, left in airports under, security. And I think that, as a Catholic, you have to really think about that. On one hand, we have to appreciate, I think, that every nation has to secure its borders and its security is important, and that is the role of the state. And Augustine has talked about this, and Paul has talked about this, is that the role of the state is for the security and the order of the society. But it can also be taken in a way that borders on bigotry and prejudice and exceeds what is actually security and becomes a malevolent something else, right?
And well, it was, if Rudy Giuliani is to be believed, and I think he is, when Trump approached him on this, the words that Trump used, and Giuliani emphasized this, was, tell me how I can do a Muslim ban legally.
Right.
So when people say this is not a Muslim ban, well, Trump thought it was. He worded it artfully, so it's not called a Muslim ban, but that's clearly what he wanted to do. And it's, it's targeting people on the basis of their religion.
It's not on the religion, at least on the countries in which their religion is the dominant.
Yeah. Except those countries that, one of the ironies, of course, is that the death toll caused by refugees in the United States currently stands at zero. There have been no people harmed by refugees. And we've got a very stringent vetting program. We had a very stringent vetting program in place. The refugees who are coming to this country have already been through a very rigorous process. But now Trump is instituting something called extreme vetting, which always makes me think of Dean Vernon Wormer's double secret probation in Animal House. It's like, what is extreme vetting? It's all it really means is I promised that I was going to punish refugees to my base of supporters. And now I'm doing that. That's happening, and as a result, people who have done nothing wrong, who are themselves victims of horrors, are being punished, punished because of where they happen to come from. And in some cases, in the case of Syria, this is an indefinite ban. And so we're watching this vast humanitarian catastrophe, the largest humanitarian crisis since World War II, and the response of the United States of America is go to hell to refugees. And as Catholics, we can't let this happen. The bishops have already, the USCCB has spoken out against it. Mm-hmm. We've heard statements from Supich. We've heard statements from Cardinal Tobin. Archbishop Vigneron in Detroit sent a letter to the imams of Michigan saying, this is wrong, and we oppose this. And so our church is speaking, the Holy Father has spoken about this, you know. Now, it isn't all bad news coming out of the Trump administration. I got to give him credit. I think that his nomination of Gorsuch, Gorsuch seems to be a rare moment where Trump has is nominating somebody who actually looks qualified for the job and doesn't appear to be at war with the institution he's going to serve.
No, he looks like, you know, frankly, very similar to Scalia without the temper.
Yeah.
So that's good.
That's a plus, too. You know,
right.
And so I'm happy about that. The problem that I see, and this has always been the concern for me, you know, Trump is Trump. He's always going to be who he is. What has always concerned me from the beginning with Trump, you know, I heard again and again people saying, you know, well, what if Hillary persecutes the church? And that was a real possibility. There were, you know, certainly moments in the Obama administration. Well, we're up against the break, but we'll return after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. We will continue this conversation with Doug O'Brien on Breadbox Media right after this message.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien. We're talking about what's going on in current events and how this affects us as Catholics who are committed, among other things, to the establishment of the common good. That's kind of the job of the state. That's what the state's primary job is to ensure the common good. And part of the problem for us as Catholics is we don't know our own church's teaching about things like the common good. Even the phrase common good, I've actually had people say, that's socialism. We don't believe in socialism. Just the phrase the common good. Because a lot of times people respond to words in this kind of Pavlovian way. I've joked, I had a friend one time who wrote something, you know, mentioned something, and in the course of it, she used the word ecology. And, you know, I was joking with her. I said, that's a liberal word. Liberals use words like ecology, you know? And so you get these kind of bizarre Pavlovian responses to things. And so when you say, you know, the four pillars of Catholic social teaching are the dignity of the human person. So people on the right like that one because you hear that phrase used in pro-life discussions, dignity of the human person. Common good, that's a socialist-sounding word or phrase, and we don't like that. That sounds too liberal, common good, so we'll reject that. Subsidiarity, yeah, I like that one because that I hear people use that. You know, libertarian writers like to talk about subsidiarity. And what's imagined is meant by that is I get to tell the state to go to hell and keep all my tax money. And that's
except
not what
the next one gets in the way of that.
Right. The next one gets in the way of that. That's not what subsidiarity means, though. All subsidiarity really means is as a general rule of thumb, the person closest to the problem or the institution closest to the problem should handle the problem and only go up the ladder of authority if that's not working. So if you go to the cops and say, somebody tried to cheat me, somebody tried to rob me, can you do something about that? And the cops go and handle the problem, well, then that was subsidiarity. If the cops say, we don't help your kind because of, you know, then it's time to go up the ladder of authority to somebody above the cops and say, the cops are not helping me because I'm black or because I'm Catholic or whatever. And then you bring in some higher authority to correct the lower institution. And that's subsidiarity. And then finally, the last pillar is solidarity. And the idea behind solidarity is simply that no man is an island entire of himself. It's not possible for us to say, Doug, your end of the Titanic is sinking. Too bad for you. Because if his end goes down, my end is going down as well. And that's all of this is biblical and it's all very sensible. But our politics has radically fractured it. So that about half of the American people like two of those pillars, and the other half of the American people like the other two of those pillars, and nobody likes all four of those pillars. And so before we are ever able to have a discussion about what's going on, we've already got people whose thinking about Catholic social teaching is primarily determined not by what the church says, but by what their favorite social and political tribes say. And so Catholic teaching tends to get cannibalized and used in order to accessorize my politics rather than my politics being placed under the judgment of Catholic social teaching and people saying, well, if Catholic social teaching rejects it, then my political party be damned. I'm not going to put it before the church's teaching. That's a very rare occurrence in the life of the church, unfortunately.
But that is what's called, though, American Catholic. So we really do have dual loyalty, right? We have a loyalty to this nation, which we love and live in and are pilgrims within, right? Mm-hmm. But we also have this other allegiance, which is even greater. And that is that because we are pilgrims here, that our greater allegiance is to God and his teaching. And
Those
four pillars of social teaching, of Catholic social teaching, actually arise out of the catechism, right? So, I mean, this is not something made up by liberal professors at Georgetown. You know, this is rooted in the wisdom of the church and the Gospels and the Old Testament and has been, you know, distilled, if you will, in four very clear understandings how we operate within society, no matter where we live in Argentina or the United States. My problem is that you get a lot of Catholic, not a lot. You get some Catholic, especially those that tend more on the conservative side, to dismiss the Catholic social teachings, these four essential pillars, as just an add-on, when in fact they are meant to be very clear guides for us in how we vote and how we live and how we interact with the state and one another.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and it's kind of, they're not negotiable.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Benedict said as well. Anyway, I just wanted to add on to that. This is kind of important and it matters now because while you can see what's happening in the very early days of this new administration from different lenses, mm-hmm. objectively, you would have to say that the ban on or the changes on immigration policy are, if nothing else, at least troubling and need to be watched, right? And need to be looked at from a Catholic perspective.
Right.
The issues of religious liberty aren't quite as cut and dry or black and white. Is that, the president was at the prayer breakfast, I believe this morning. and among many things of which he spoke about was also an idea that he is floating, which is to repeal an amendment that says that religious leaders should not speak from the pulpit in favor or against any specific candidate. And, you know, on one hand, people might say, well, that's wonderful. But on the other hand, we need to recognize also, though, that there is a troubling reality here, that if you have, you know, Protestant pastors or imams or rabbis or whomever, right, speaking from the pulpit, telling people who they should and shouldn't vote with the authority of their faith or, you know, as the word of God, that poses some issues. And we need to look at all of these things in that context.
Yeah.
And I, of course, did not raise the most ridiculous things that he said at the prayer breakfast. Well,
yes, it was classic. I was remarking about this a little bit earlier online. Just, you know, when it doesn't wind up killing people or grinding the face of the poor or destroying the life of the alien and the orphan and the widow, I have to say that I am really, really enjoying Trump making just an unbelievable spectacle of himself. So yesterday, you really have to read the transcript just to believe it. So he gave some off-the-cuff remarks, as is his wont, on Black History Month, that were just hilarious. And it was like this sort of, as it always is, this kind of rambling stream of consciousness thing that mostly revolved around how Black History Month reminded him of how much he suffered at the hands of media that he doesn't like, who have been mean to him. It was so most of the focus of Black History Month is about him, and also about how he won the election, which is important to remember in case you'd forgotten that. And something about the bust of Martin Luther King in the Oval Office, and then something else about Frederick Douglass that really gave you the impression that, A, he has no idea who Frederick Douglass is, and B, he seems to think Frederick Douglass is still alive.
He's been doing some important things, you said.
It was like, yes, 120 years ago when he died. But it was magnificent. It was so funny. And it was like, there's two ways you can look at this. One way, of course, would be to say that this is deeply offensive to African Americans. But on the other hand, you know, mostly it was not African Americans who came out looking bad.
As a result
of this, it was just, you just look at it and shake your head and think, wow, it's going to be 4 years of this guy. Okay. And then today, the prayer breakfast, which revolved a great deal around when he wasn't talking about repealing the Johnson Amendment, it was about a prayer request because Arnold Schwarzenegger sucks and is giving his show bad ratings. So you can see that his priorities are really in place as 90,000 people are suffering as a result of his draconian refugee policy. But, you know, this is what happens when you have a narcissistic sociopath running the government, these kinds of things. When we return, we're almost up against a break again, but when we return, I'd like to talk a little bit more about, particularly about how we as pro-life people should be responding to the I think very good choice of Neil Gorsuch, but other things as well that we really have to continue to take into account. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Doug O'Brien, and we'll be back talking about our duty as Christian citizens in these United States right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Doug O'Brien. We are talking about what's going on here in the U.S. As we watch the chaos, the agent of chaos, who is the president of the United States, doing his thing. It has not been unmitigated awfulness, as we were talking about. He's done something right, I think, in appointing or nominating Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Not an utterly flawless nomination, but you'd never get utterly flawless nomination, so that's, I think, kind of pointless to hope for that. Apparently, the big news today is when he was in high school, I forget the exact name of it, but he was a satirist at Georgetown Prep who was irritated with some sort of liberal organization at Georgetown Prep. And so he started something called, something like the Fascism Fan Club, or I forget. It had some name with fascist in it. And it sounds like the sort of thing that I might have done in high school.
Right.
Just to be a pain in the neck, you know? And so everybody's all a Twitter about this today. And what does this forebode for us? And it's like, it forebodes that he was just a 17-year-old smart aleck,
Right.
Who hasn't done some dumbass thing when they were 17 years old? So I'm just not going to lose sleep over this, But people are sending me this with, furrowed brow all worried about what it all means. And I don't think it means much of anything. The guy, Gorsuch, seems to be a decent guy. He's written very thoughtfully about the legal ramifications of assisted suicide and euthanasia. He very clearly has a view of the dignity of human life that comports with Catholic teaching. And so, good. Of all the things that Trump has done, this is one of those moments where I think that it's important for those of us who constitute the resistance to this disastrous, least qualified president ever to sit in the office. You got to give him props for when he does the right thing.
And I think, interestingly, Gorsuch also has a reputation for, at least in some of his writings, to be skeptical of overweening executive power. So that also is another positive. And he was favorably predisposed to the Little Sisters of the Poor, their lawsuit regarding having to provide contraception coverage in the ACA. So I think in a lot of ways this is really a good choice. And I'll say this too, having the vice president, regardless of what one might think of him, but symbolically having the vice president attend the March for Life was also good. The problem is, like you said, you've got to juxtapose these really good, positive things with just moronic statements about Frederick Douglass or going to a prayer breakfast where you could actually say something meaningful and spend 5-10 minutes talking about ratings of a television show. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about yourself.
This is kind of the absurdity of this whole thing, except as you were saying, this absurdity does have real life consequences. So, for example, we want to make America safe, but then you have 5-year-olds, being detained at airports because
and handcuffed.
Because they're presumed to be a national security risk. And that's
And having your press flag come out and defend that,
right.
Well, 5-year-olds can be a danger to the United States. It's just shut up. Stop.
Right. Right.
Stop talking, And you get that kind of stuff. The Frederick Douglass thing, and his absurd remarks on Black History Month and his absurd comments to the prayer breakfast, I just find hilarious, the guy makes Sarah Palin and George W. Bush sound like Abraham Lincoln and Cicero.
Yes.
And that I write off, but it's the policy, and the particularly the policy that is focused on really deadly policies toward immigrants, because or toward refugees, because that's what we're talking about. Why are they refugees? They're refugees because they're trying to escape death in the places that they're coming from. And when we close the door and slam the door in their faces and turn our backs on them, what we are saying is it is better that you die than that you come here. And so we really are talking about a pro-life issue there, because
absolutely,
you know, when we're as Catholics, we're talking about the dignity and sanctity of human life from conception to natural death, not conception to birth. And so there's a one-year-old kid right now who's trying to get here. Parents are trying to get him here for treatment. And if he doesn't get that treatment, he's going to die. And so what troubles me, this is why I only give one cheer to Pence and Kellyanne Conway addressing the March for Life. Because what I ask in such transactions is, who benefits from that political transaction? What unborn baby life was saved as a result of that? Those remarks of the March for Life. Well, not one. But what does the administration get in return for it? Well, I can tell you, because I've been getting the email all week. Administration gets in return for it is carte blanche for everything that it wants to do. How dare you question the most pro-life president we have ever had? Look, Neil Gorsuch, case closed. Our work is done here as pro-life Christians. We have gotten the president that we wanted, and everything that he does from here on in, we will bless and sanctify. Amen and amen. And that means we're blessing and sanctifying letting that kid die without cancer treatment. We're blessing and sanctifying all the other refugees that we're turning our backs on. And in addition to that, what the Trump administration chose to do last week was say, we're going to start publishing a weekly roster of crimes committed by immigrants. And they mean any immigrant, not illegal immigrants, all immigrants. This was actually done. Exactly the same thing was done, and for the same purposes, to the benefit of the regime. This was done to Jews.
Right.
In Nazi Germany, the whole idea was to associate in the minds of the German people, Jew equals criminal. And it's an incredibly, and it's never been done in the United States before. Why is it being done now? Well, you know, for similar reasons, because we have a xenophobic regime in charge. We have to speak about that. And frankly, the people who supported Trump and who voted for Trump have a special obligation to speak about this. And the thing that I find most sinister about this, whenever you bring up the evils that are being done by this president, the response is always, well, but Hillary.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, live in the present. Hillary lost. Move on. Hillary is not an issue anymore. Nobody's talking about the election except the people who now have to feel that they need to rationalize their vote. And so they keep going, instead of living in the present, they keep living eternally on November 8th, 2016, and say, well, but Hillary, you know, was going to do X, Y, and Z. Hillary's gone. She has gone to wherever it is, losing presidential candidates go after they have failed.
I think she's hiking in the woods in Chappaqua, New York.
Is she? Okay. Probably reviewing her disastrous campaign and how could she have lost to this guy. What this gets me back to, you know, what we were talking about before, that we have got to stop measuring our politics against our culture war enemies. The excuse that's made for this refugee policy is, well, Obama, did something that vaguely resembles this in 2011. So what?
Right.
Is this, are we measuring what we do against the gospel, or are we measuring what we do? How did Obama become the moral template upon which the Trump administration is supposed to be based? Why are we doing that? Well, we're doing that because, again, we're trying to rationalize our vote. And we have to start thinking in light of the gospel, not in light of, you know, how do we defeat our imagined culture war enemies. So that troubles me. End of sermon. Sorry.
No. I mean, what you're saying is what I think a lot of people think is that the people that supported him now are put, with some responsibility to push back on what they know to be bad policies, mm-hmm. right? I mean, someone who did not support Donald Trump, it doesn't really have much standing to criticize or to push back. But those that did do.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so we have to start taking responsibility as Catholics. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Doug O'Brien, and we will be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Doug O'Brien, talking a little bit about our responsibilities as Catholics in what is, after all, a representative government. Who was it? J.K. Rowling was on a roll yesterday on her Twitter feed. With people chewing her up about various things, you know, and she gives these very dry responses to things that, you know, so she's had somebody say, you know, I'm going to burn all my copies of your books and your DVDs because of this, whatever, something that she said. And her response was, I think fumes from burning DVDs are poisonous and I still have all your money. So go ahead, borrow my lighter if you like. And anyway, somebody was chewing her out and saying, you know, you should shut up and stop talking about politics. You have no right to talk about politics. And she was sort of very patiently reminding them that in a free society, anyone can talk about politics. That's the whole point of a representative government, is that anyone gets to have their say. And it doesn't matter who you are. And that's really true. It really is our responsibility as Christian citizens to make our voices heard in whatever way we can.
And actually, to not is at some level to cooperate with behaviors and policies that you don't support, right?
Right.
Or that you know are contrary to the gospel. You know, it gets back. You know, you had mentioned. I think in another time is that, you know, Hitler got to power, and I'm not saying Donald Trump is Hitler. Don't mistake what I'm saying. But his path to power was through a democratic process, and it was in fact the tax on the Jews that occurred with people not stopping it. You know, without the populace rising up and saying this is not acceptable in our society, right? And I think we're kind of in a similar, again, Hitler and Donald Trump are not equivalent, so set that aside. but when you have people of the Muslim faith, when you have immigrants, when you have people who disagree with him being attacked very overtly by the president and his henchmen, then I think that we as Catholics have to stand up and say something and have with whatever vehicles best suit us. It could be over coffee with friends, or it can be on social media or whatever. But to say, for example, banning refugees is not a Christian response to people fleeing terror and death in their homeland. Right.
Right. Yeah.
That and if we don't push back, it gives at some level the impression that we're complicit in it. And I think that none of us that hold this faith to be true and believe that those four pillars that you mentioned of Catholic social teaching, in other words, how we interact with one another and in society, are elemental to our faith, then we can't be silent. We actually have to speak up on everything from not just the immigration issue, but to, for other ridiculous and foolish things that seem to be coming out of this White House. And I think, and I argue as well, people who seem to be having great influence in this administration, like Mr. Bannon having a role, a political person having a role in the National Security Council, does not make, to my mind, much sense. Now, is that a faith issue? No. But it's a practical issue. As you know, here's a guy who 9 months ago said that we're no doubt going to have a war with China over the islands in the South China Sea. Those kind of statements, need to not be made, first of all.
And the guy making them should not be on the National Security Council.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The good thing is, as I understand it, is the Senate supposed to approve that? Hopefully the Senate will say hell no to that appointment. But then, of course, the question is, will Trump obey the law? Because he's made that clear, with the court order that was issued against the refugee ban. And Trump's response was essentially the same as Andrew Jackson's to Justice Marshall. Jackson ordered the Seminoles off their land in one of the gravest crimes of ethnic cleansing in American history. And Justice Marshall said, you can't do that. And Jackson's response was, Mr. Justice Marshall has made his decision, now let him enforce it, and just went ahead and went ahead with the ethnic cleansing anyway. And Trump's response to the court injunction against the immigrant against the refugee ban was, too bad, I'm going to do it anyway, because the executive owns all the guns. And he seems to have very little regard for the actual rule of law, unless it's his word. And as Americans, then, we have to make our voices heard when the executive is behaving in a lawless way, in the faint and flickering hope that the legislative branch might get off its duff and do something. You're right. We have to speak. The Bannon thing, I think, is important for us to pay attention to. Bannon, last I heard, Bannon is a Catholic, I think. But I'm not really clear on that.
I think he's not, actually. I think he left the church and is a some sort of evangelical or something.
Oh, well, that's okay.
But I don't know that. Don't hold me to that.
Okay. All right. Well, good. I mean, I that makes me feel a little bit better. Hooray for our team. You know, we don't have guy on our conscience. You know,
great trade.
Yes, exactly. You know,
we
but
got a couple first round picks and then traded Bannon.
But the guy strikes me as, I think, an extremely dangerous human being. He's very proud of the fact that he made Breitbart, which he ran. He called it the platform for the alt-right. The alt-right is essentially white supremacists and Nazis in bow ties, who spent a lot of time on the internet talking about white racial supremacy and, this kind of thing. He's been very involved in that. And Trump is very clearly sympathetic to all of that stuff. His national security advisor, Mike Flynn, went to Austria and met with the leader of the Austrian Freedom Party. The Austrian Freedom Party is literally a white ethno-nationalist group that was literally, truly founded by an actual Nazi. And the head of that party was given a special invitation to the Trump inauguration. That, all those white areas in the photographs, that wasn't actually blank space. I think those are just Klansmen. So this is an administration that's very empathetic toward all of that filth. And it's constantly signaling to that crowd that they're empathetic to it. And so, Trump, it really is shocking, and it's unprecedented what he did in putting Bannon on the National Security Council. A, he demoted two people who actually should be there, the chair of the Joint Chiefs and the director of National Intelligence, were both demoted so that this crank who trades in conspiracy theories, who is empathetic to white supremacists and neo-Nazis, and who has said, oh yeah, we'll be at war with China in a couple of years, and who is on record as saying that his goals, this is actually, what he said, that his goals are the same as Lenin's. He wants to destroy the establishment. He wants to bring it all crashing down. That guy is now on the National Security Council. And that should scare the hell out of us.
Let's say for one moment that those are just outrageous comments made by a P.T. Barnum character, much like the president is, right? Let's just say that for a moment.
Okay.
For me, and this is me being, dead cold sober right now, is that for me, I cannot think of another president, though, that would do that because of their deep respect for the office of the presidency and what that means, not just to our nation, but to the rest of the world, right? We've spoken a couple of times about I believe in American exceptionalism, not American messianism, but American exceptionalism, that we play a role for good in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that good comes from this multiplicity of ideas and ethnicities and, religious belief and all those things, right? It in many ways is a manifestation of the idea of human dignity, right? Mm-hmm. My challenge or my problem with the president, beyond specific policies, is in fact kind of a demeaning of this hugely important office. Yeah. If someone has made those statements, they by virtue then disallow themselves to take that role. But then you think this is the same president who sits and tweets outrageous comments all the time or goes to a prayer breakfast and talks about The Apprentice television ratings. So this is... we are very strange.
Yes, we're in a very strange place. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Mr. Doug O'Brien. We will be back tomorrow with Deacon Stephen Redones. I want to thank all you guys out there, Radio Land, for listening in. Our producer today was Danny Head. Good luck. Until then, have a grand evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.